The recordings are started.
Thank you very much, and welcome everyone to this CCWG on Enhancing Guidance Accountability meeting number 84. Can you believe we've already done 84 meetings so far? And this is February 16th, 6 UTC, and as usual, we will be having the roll call based on those who are on the Adobe Connect room. And if there is anyone in the phone bridge that is not connected to the Adobe Connect room, we would like to kindly ask for you to state your name so we can add you to the roll call.
Hi, this is Becky Burr. I'm not in Adobe yet.
Leon Cheryl, I'll be joining. It's just not loaded yet.
Okay, Becky Burr,
Gregory.
Sherry Lambinor, Holly Gregory.
Yes, Holly Gregory, not joined yet.
Rosemary Say on the phone, but not on the Adobe Connect room yet.
Thank you, Rosemary.
Yeah, this is Sean as well. On Adobe only.
Okay, Sean, did you take it? Anybody else that is in the phone bridge that is not in the Adobe Connect room? Okay. So, as a reminder, for filing your statement of interest, please kindly update or file your statement of interest if you haven't done so by now. And, of course, staff would be happy to assist you if you have any problems on filing or updating your statement of interest. Please feel free to reach out to staff if you need any help. And, well, today's call hopefully should be a short call. And we will be commenting on the supplementary report, that the comments received on the supplementary report. And I'd like to point out and stress out that this is not about, of course, opening or reopening the issues that we have in our report, but rather to go through the different comments that we received in this review of the final draft. And for that, I would like to turn to my co-chair, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Leon. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Thomas Rickert, the GNSO appointed co-chair to the CCWG. And we've brought up the timeline for you in the remote participation room for your review. And just as a reminder of what we've circulated a few days back. We need to be very cognizant of the dates that you find specified here. So you saw the report that was sent out to you for your review, so that we did a sort of an internal feedback loop with everyone in this group. We have incorporated edits from the leadership team as well as from legal. All the comments that we received from our legal advisors have been sent to the group. So if you're interested in details on what the lawyers identified as areas that need to be changed, please take a look at those documents. You find all the markups published on the mailing list. What I can say, though, is that, Rosemary and Holly, please correct me if I'm wrong, the vast majority of comments and requests for changes that has been identified by our legal team was either cosmetic, linguistic, or minor tweaks in order to ensure that we have consistency in terminology and otherwise throughout the report. So you shouldn't expect anything major from the legal team. So that has been included. And we will now continue to send the updated report after this discussion to our group so that we can publish it or pass it on to the chartering organizations for their approval on February 18th. And what's important in the meantime, between the 16th and the 18th, and I'm just stressing this so that it's that it is perfectly clear on the record is that we expect the minority statements on the 17th so that we can include them in the final report. So should you plan to issue a minority statement, please do make sure that you send it to us, to staff, to the list, so that everyone knows what's going on and so that it can be included in the final report. As you will recall from our discussions, we will then hopefully have the chartering organizations approve our recommendations, our final report by the 9th. Prior to that, we hopefully get a sign-off letter, which is not directly related to us as a group, but that's important to the chartering organizations. You will remember that the chartering organizations had made their approval of the CWG requirements conditional to us, the CCWG, delivering on certain aspects of their proposal. So while we have no indication that we would not meet CWG requirements, we've asked the CWG to send a formal letter to us or to formally sign off that we have met all their requirements. And then hopefully on March 10th during the Marrakesh meeting, the ICANN board meeting will consider the final report and hand over the report, the full package, to NTIA. And that will conclude this part of our work. So we're going to get back to the timeline at the end of the call to refresh everyone's memory on what we have to do, but this is the timeline, we have to make sure that we play by it. I see Brett's hand is up. Brett, please.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Okay, thank you. This is just a clarifying question. Are all participants able to submit minority reports, or is that just reserved for the members or for the SOACs after their evaluations of the proposal? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Brett. I think we have published an excerpt of the charter a couple of days back on the list, which specifies that minority statements for the purpose of this report can only be submitted by members, i.e. by those five individuals each that have been appointed by the chartering organizations. Kavuz? Kavuz, the floor is yours.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, I said good morning, good day, good time to everybody. Yes, I fully agree with you. Minority views is just and strictly limited to the members only. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavuz. And let me just add for full transparency that certainly the chartering organizations, if they have minority statements to file, they can do so through their members. You know, the members are sort of acting as a linkage, as a facilitator between the chartering organizations and our group. So with that, we would like to dive into the substance of the comments that we received. Again, the feedback that we received from our lawyers has been incorporated. Holly has kindly confirmed in the chat room that the changes that they have asked for were indeed very minor comments, and thanks for your congratulations on the great job, which I gladly passed on to all of you, including staff, and first and foremost to staff who's been working very hard to get this done. Talking about staff, I would suggest that we go through the changes that were requested in the last couple of days one by one, and Bernie has kept an overview of what changes have been requested. And so I would like to ask you, Bernie, to introduce those requested changes from Andrew Sullivan and others, and then let's quickly confirm with the group whether or not those changes should make their way into the final report.
Thank you, Thomas. Good morning, good day, everyone. We'll start with Andrew Sullivan. The first comment was on protocol and parameters versus protocol parameters. I believe that got caught by the lawyers before we actually before we had to make that change. So I could not find when I searched that in the document. So I think we're good on that one. On Annex 4, Andrew made a number of comments. I think most of them we were good with. The first one was about the liaisons are treated by ICANN as non-voting members and are not subject to being removed per the rules. And so starting in paragraph 40, there was adding a note similar to note this power applies only to voting members of the ICANN board and not liaisons. The lawyer suggested we append some text to that to say that California law does not treat non-voting board members as directors, and so that's been done.
Before you proceed, should there be questions with respect to the changes that have been asked for, we can certainly dive into the niceties of the language, but you will see the updated report shortly, and I would suggest that we let Bernie go through the changes and open it up for questions from your side, because you know the points discussed so far have been explanatory only. So with respect to the board liaisons, you know, we would just clarify that under Californian corporate law, we call them directors, but they're not directors in a legal sense, and therefore their status is somewhat different under law. But we do not change our recommendations in terms of substance, which is why we think that this is a minor tweak that will help our target audience understand better what we're doing, but it doesn't change the essence of our recommendations. So, Bernie, sorry for cutting across you, and back over to you.
No problem. Thank you. Yes, that was good clarification. Also important to note on that point that we did discuss with the lawyers and arrive at a concept that this would be fine to include in the text. And good point. I should pause after each one. So are there any questions or comments on this change? Sebastian.
Yes, thank you very much, Sebastian Bachelet. My question is not so much what it's on the Californian possibility, but it's what it's really done today. Are we sure that there is no problem with the real situation of the member of the board who are liaison, who have the same duty and the same treatment than the other board member, except that they don't vote? We have the answer about the Californian law, but I would like to have the same answer about the trial side. Thank you.
Sebastian, this is Thomas, and I see there's a queue forming, so let's please not reopen that entire discussion. Sebastian, to your point, the liaisons do not vote. That's one material difference from other directors that you've already mentioned, and they do not have a fiduciary duty under Californian law, which other directors do have. So there's a distinction to be made between the two. Alan has pointed out in the chat already that in his view, we have treated them differently, also in terms of terminology, but that also that we've just incorrectly referred to them as directors. And so we're basically rectifying maybe a mistake that has been made previously. So we're not changing the substance. We have had this discussion over the previous month. So should there be any need for further clarifications or questions, please go ahead. Otherwise, I would suggest that we proceed. Tijan, your hand is up. Tijani, we can't hear you.
Yes, do you hear me?
Now we can hear you, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Tijani speaking. I think that we don't have to change our language because the designator designates director, has the right to designate directors and to remove them. And the liaisons are not designated by the designator. They are appointed by SOACs as a liaison, and they don't have the right to decide on anything. So why we are removing them if they don't decide? So they are not involved in the decision making, and I don't think that we should remove them. So our language is very good, and it is in accordance with the statutory rights of the designator. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tijani. That's a good point. I suggest that we defer to the lawyers to capture this adequately. So we want to be perfectly accurate with our report. We will make sure that we don't change the substance of our recommendation. And I would suggest that with that we move on to the next point. And let me ask those not speaking to please mute their microphones because we have some a nasty background noise. I see Izumi's hand is up. Izumi, please.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, you can be heard.
I guess I'm having audio issue again.
Izumi, you could be heard, so please do speak.
Okay, great. So I think Matthew has already responded to my question that I just had one clarification to make on our recommendation 8, which is on reconsideration. So I think on the third version of the proposal, we actually had a clause which says that number resources issues are out of scope of reconsideration, which is consistent with the same equivalent sentence on the IRP. So I just want to double check that maybe perhaps it was an overlook for the final version that this sentence was somehow removed. So I just want to make sure that there are no changes from the third version on this sentence.
Thank you, Zumi. And actually, the fact that you had audio issues, which has delayed you in asking the question, has given staff the opportunity to look into this already. So I can confirm that this needs to be fixed in the report, and it, we take note of that, and you can consider it done. Thanks for the question, and thanks for spotting this. So with that, I think we can move on to the next request to change. Back over to you, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. On all questions of numbering of diagrams, everyone has gone through them. The lawyers have gone through them in great detail, and we will be fixing those. Partially why it's not done as of the moment of this call is that in some cases we're waiting on explain to make those modifications. So this is a blanket statement that all changes to diagrams will be updated. Any questions on those? All right.
Izumi, Bernie, let's just pause for another second. Izumi has raised her hand again. Izumi? Apparently, that was an old hand. Bernie, back over to you.
Thank you. Seeing no other comment, we'll go to Andrew Sullivan's next point. Naming a replacement, it would be a good idea to call up that there's an actual mechanism by which the replacement is named. Hasn't actually been established yet and needs to be sorted out in work stream two. This is from paragraph 50. This is not included in work stream two, and I think paragraph 50 states that the nominating committee, which is talking about nominating committee producing replacement nominations in case a director is removed, quite clearly states that the nominating committee will be reviewing its procedures to allow this. So I don't think there was a requirement to make this change as such. Questions, comments?
So Andrew is on the call. Andrew, maybe you can give us an indication of whether...
Sorry, I was doing so in the chat in the purposes of going fast, but yeah, that's fine. I could be just wrong. I thought that, you know, I thought it had come up before, but if not, then not.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And back over to you, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. On the next point from Andrew, the same clarification about liaisons could be made in paragraph 60, in the brackets except for the CEO. I think that's the same answer we had on that previous point about liaisons. And we've agreed that the lawyers will be reviewing that language and making sure everything is correct. Any additional points or questions on this? All right. And finally, the right to reject ICANN board decisions relating to reviews of IANA functions, to say the right to reject ICANN board decisions relating to reviews of IANA naming functions in keeping with Para 75. This is the text in Para 77. It was agreed that this was correct and that change has been made. Any further questions or comments on that point? Doesn't look like it. All right. And that concludes the section on Annex 4 with respect to Andrew's changes. Annex 5, there was on Para 11, the mission item says coordinates the allocation assignment of the root zone of the domain name system DNS. There appears to be missing after of. Labels, names, or something like that. This was caught in the lawyer's edits of the document, and they used the names solution to that. Are there any questions regarding that? I see Brett has his hand up.
Yes, sorry. This is actually in reference to an Annex 4 question. We went by it. I didn't know if there was an opportunity here to raise an issue that I raised to Bernie directly, which is that the Annex 1 and Annex 2 language regarding NTIA's requirement on government, replacing its role with governments, should be updated in Annex 4. The language should be updated in Annex 4. At the conclusion of that, similar to what was adopted last week in Annex 1 and Annex 2, and while I have this on the line, it should also be updated in terms of Annex 14 as well, just as a matter of consistency and accuracy of what we're actually proposing for the group. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. There has been some discussion on that, so I think, Bernie, you will make sure that there is consistency throughout the report, right?
Yes, sir. I was just going to tell Brett, I'm coming up to Brett changes next, and that would be one of them. So, yes, Brett, that change we haven't
Sorry,
made
apologize.
Yet. But we, any other points or comments before we proceed? Seeing none, all right. Yes, the next changes will be from Brett on Annex 6 and Recommendation 6. The human rights bullet on page 6 are inconsistent with bullets 2, 4, and 5. All include a caveat of if any or if at all. And so we went through that, and that was correct. So the language has been updated to consider which specific human rights conventions or other instruments, if any, should be used by ICANN. That change has been made. I will be glad to take questions. Caboos? I see Caboose's hand has gone down. Are there any other questions? Brett?
Yes, sorry. I don't want to disrupt your flow here. Are we going to have an opportunity to make additional clarification suggestions at the end of this call or at the end of this particular section of the call? Or should we raise them as we are going through? I don't know whether we're going to be addressing this by annex or just by the number of comments that you have received from individuals. Thanks.
Brett, I would suggest that we let Bernie run through the changes that were noted and that can easily be dealt with. And once we've gone through that list of requested changes that we know, then we will open it up for any additional changes there are. So, Bernie?
Thank you, sir. The next comment was from Caboos, and we've had a little trouble understanding what he was suggesting in his comment. I've written back to Caboos for the leadership, asking him for further clarification and suggested text for his point. I have not seen that yet. So, Caboos, we're waiting on your update, and it should come quickly if we're going to get an amendment in. I see Caboos has his hand up.
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes, we hear you, Caboos.
Yes, I raised a question because the text appears three parts in our recommendations. The language in recommendation one relating to the same issue is much more clear with respect to the conditions or environment or circumstances under which any of these two options are taken, because several times referred to except individual board director and recall of the entire board, but it is not clear that how they are treated. In what I suggest, that I didn't want to go to the exact text, I said that take what is in recommendation one, which is more clear with respect to these two options. So the issue is that the two options are open, but it is not mentioned whether this is entirely free to take any of these two options or these two options relate to a particular circumstances. This is not clearer for the reader. If you go to the page 3, it mentioned that the enforcement process can proceed in one of the two ways. It is totally free to select any of these two ways, or each of these ways is related to particular circumstances under which this option could be taken. So my question is whether the option is entirely free to take any of the two or each option under particular circumstances. That is something that is not clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboos. Clarity is always in the eye of the beholder. It is my impression that the report seems to be fine for other parts of this group. I would really like to encourage you, Caboos, to suggest an edit so that we can read it and then decide whether a requested change, changed language needs to be incorporated into the report. So thank you very much for your suggestion. Bernie, would you like to go on?
Thank you, sir. Yes. All right. We've said that we've dealt with all the lawyer comments from Sidley and Adler, and thank you very much. They were very well done. However, Annex 5, the mission and core values, did take on quite a few amendments for clarification. The lawyers noted that we refer to a side-by-side comparison regarding the picket fence, which was not included. And so Becky did have that document, and it is now included. A series of comments were around Section 4, changes from the third draft, where the lawyers didn't quite see the updates as clearly versus the final. And so the side-by-side comparisons on Section 4 of Annex 5 were completely redone by Becky today. So big hand out to Becky. The new language has been provided to the lawyers who've made a few minor amendments, and so we have a final on that addressing all the comments that were brought up for Annex 5. And that would complete the lawyer comments that we got. Some changes still need to be made, as in for graphics. It's the same comment that I noted earlier. We will be dealing with updating the graphics in the proposal later today as we get the input from our friends who produce those graphics. And finally, our last comment is from the board regarding the changes to threshold if applying the GAC carve-out, and no change has been made with that as of the moment, and I think this was an item, as we discussed on the list, that would be discussed at the meeting today. And I would turn it back over to Thomas at this point, unless there are questions for other things.
Hello.
Thank you very much. Sean, we will get to you in a moment. So this next agenda item, this next topic to be discussed is on a change that was asked for by Bruce. And since it's related to Becky's subject area, I would like to invite Becky to briefly introduce the topic, and then we will move to the Q&A comments. Becky?
Is it possible to go through non-controversial corrections or clarifications before we get to something that's going to resolve and involve probably some debate? I'm sorry, this is Brett.
If you want to make a quick point now, Brett, by all means, fire away.
Thank you. In recommendation one on page 8, there's the section calling for process for identifying GAC consensus advice and applying to the GAC carve-out. In the first bullet there, it says that when GAC provides advice to the board, the GAC will need to indicate whether that advice was approved by consensus. I think there and throughout that section, we need to specify what we mean by consensus, which is consensus as defined as the absence of any objection. And in Annex 2 on page 12, in paragraph 52, there is a statement there that says that thresholds that presented in this document were determined based on the assessment. If fewer than 5 ICANNs, SOs, and ACs agree to be decisional participants, these thresholds for consensus support may be adjusted. The next sentence says thresholds would also have to be adjusted if ICANN changes to have more SOs and ACs. I think we should be consistent. Either it should be maybe adjusted or have to be adjusted. Either one is fine with me, but I think we need to be consistent both ways in there. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I think that the language at the end of Annex 4 and Annex 14 involving the NTIA requirement about being replaced with a government letter and a governmental organization solution, both need to be updated to reflect the language that was added to Annex 1 and Annex 2 last week and circulated on the list. Thank you. Those are the only comments that I have right now.
Thanks very much, Brett. Let me just test with the group whether there's any objection to including those. So to me, it really sounds like clarifying and just providing for consistency throughout the report. So thank you for that, and thanks for being so attentive, Brett. I suggest that we now hear Becky on the on the tweak to or the requested change to the carve-out. And we will then hear Sean. So, Becky, over to you.
Thanks. I'm just going to paraphrase this, and Bruce is on the call, and he is the person who conveyed this, so we should make sure to give him a chance to correct anything that I'm going to say about this. There are some places where when the GAC carve-out is invoked, we would change the level of the level of support required just to reflect the fact that there would be one fewer decisional party at the table, and in order to avoid a situation where the community must act unanimously to invoke one of its powers. The suggestion, I take it from the board, was that would be acceptable, assuming that where a situation arose that the empowered community had a choice between bringing a community IRP or simply spilling the board, that before spilling the board, the community would pursue an independent review. There has been some discussion on the list regarding situations where, for example, the community might have the authority to spill the board but might not, on the other hand, have met the requirements for standing for bringing an independent review, meaning that the board action or inaction that was being challenged violated the bylaws in some fashion. My assumption, and Bruce can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the board's suggestion would not apply in those situations. In other words, there would be no suggestion that the community would be deprived of its ability to exercise the spill the board option because the situation did not permit an independent review, but that where the community essentially had the choice to act either by bringing an IRP or by spilling the board, it would first pursue the independent review option. And I believe that's the suggestion on the table. And Bruce, please correct me if I've misstated that in any way.
Thanks, Becky. I would suggest that, in fact, we offer Bruce the opportunity to speak to that because he was suggesting the change, and then we move to Cavus. So thanks, Cavus, for your patience, and Bruce.
Thank you. Thomas, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. Yes, look, I think the board's feedback on previous drafts of the report has been fairly clear that removal of the board is very much an extreme option, and that we believe that it needs to have broad community support, and we believe the threshold should be at least four supporting organisations or advisory committees voting in favour as part of the community decision process to remove the board. What we observed last week is that there was a lot of discussion about the special case of GAC advice, and the CCWG had proposed that in the case of GAC advice, if the board followed GAC advice, that the GAC wouldn't be able to participate in that decision process to formally decide whether to remove the board, and so that the threshold should reduce from four to three. The board's view is that certainly in most cases that we've seen in recent history, the complaint is really about was the board exceeding the mission of ICANN, or was the board not following its bylaws with respect to following that GAC advice, and therefore we believe the most appropriate mechanism for actually giving an independent view of that would be to use the independent review panel process. You know, we think that's the appropriate process to use to independently determine whether we have followed our bylaws or not. And to give a specific example, we saw in the case of Dot Africa that the GAC had advised the board to withdraw Dot Africa from the application process. The board followed that advice. In this case, the applicant went through the IRP process, and the IRP process found that the board didn't take all the steps it should and recommended it be placed back in the process. So we think that's an example of the mechanisms working. So our view is that we would be prepared to accept dropping from four to three with respect to GAC advice, provided that the independent review mechanism is used to make a decision of whether or not we have followed our bylaws, and that our accepting of that advice is consistent with the mission of ICANN.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Let's move to Caboose now.
Thank you, Thomas. I think the explanation given by Becky and by Bruce both were much, much complex than simple proposal by the board, Bruce. So I suggest just put the initial proposal by the board submitted by Bruce on the on the screen, and we can see that it's quite simple, because we need four in favor and three and one against, and now because of the non-GAC participation, that will be reduced to three. Three in the views of the board was not sufficient. Then they proposed some compensation aspect, and that is a simple proposal of Bruce. If you put it on the screen, it will be quite clear rather than explain it, because it's much more complex than it was as was written. So could we put that on the screen to see the proposal? It's quite simple, and I have accepted that from the very beginning. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose. Any further comments on this point? So the proposal on the table is to wait for an IRP to be decided upon in favor of the community before the board removal takes place. Brett, please.
The board's proposal is that if this issue is related to a matter of whether ICANN's board's decision is within the scope and mission of ICANN, that the community should first try to go to an IRP before moving over to try and spill the board, then I think that is fine. What is troubling to me is that in Bruce's email, he implied that if the IRP failed, that the community would not then have an opportunity to spill the board if that results went that way. And I'm trying to get clarification on whether that is indeed the board's proposal, or if it is the more narrow thing, which says that on the process towards spilling the board, if the community decides to move in that direction, that they must go to the IRP process first before moving to spill the board in matters where the question at hand is whether ICANN is moving beyond its scope and mission. Can someone clarify that for me, please?
Thanks for the question, Brett. And Bruce has conveniently not lowered his hand in the meantime. So, Bruce, the floor is yours again.
I think if you're saying that we've had an independent process and you're saying the independent process finds that the board did not breach its mission or bylaws, in our view, then the threshold of three shouldn't apply. That means the threshold of four would apply. If the IRP finds that the board did not follow its bylaws and process, then the threshold of three would apply. So in other words, the idea is that for having the threshold of three, it should be both that the IRP has found the board was in breach and the threshold of three then decided to spill the board.
Brad, does that answer the question?
It does a little bit in that at least Bruce is clarifying he fails. However, what that does do is it introduces it undermines the impact of the carve-out itself, because then GAC would be potentially a participant, decisional participant in the final decision to spill the board when it involves a decision based on GAC advice, which is exactly the scenario that we designed the carve-out to address. So I think that I don't think that this actually resolves the issue. I think if the IRP fails, we should just hold to the GAC carve-out involving board decisions based on GAC advice. I agree with Becky and I agree with Bruce that this is a very unusual and extreme situation that I think is very, very unlikely to happen, but we should allow the process that we developed to address board decisions based on consensus GAC advice to play itself out as we decided last week, and not in essence, create a carve-out for the carve-out. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. Tijani?
Thank you very much, Thomas. Tijani speaking. As I said before, the removal of the whole board is a very serious decision that we don't have to make it easy to be taken. We don't have to be to make it easy to happen, because it may have a very serious consequence on ICANN. That's why I was opposed to the removal of the board by three SONDCs only. Now the proposal of the GAC make it a little bit better, but it is still not enough for me to make the board removed by only three SONDCs.
Tijani, this is Thomas. Had you finished? It sounded like you were cut off.
Yes, I finished.
Thank you. Bruce, is this an old hand or a new hand?
So I lowered the hand. Although I will just quickly respond to Brett. We're not talking about changing the GAC carve-out. What we're saying is that if in the case of an IRP finding against the board, that the threshold would be three SOs and ACs. In the case of an IRP finding in favour of the board, the threshold would be four SOs and ACs. Four SOs and ACs does not require the GAC to participate. It could be the GNSO, the CCNSO, the ASO and ALAC would be sufficient, which would be the four. Which would be sufficient without requiring GAC. So I don't think it's a GAC carve-out issue. We're merely saying that in order to lower the threshold from four to three, there should also be an IRP finding against the board.
Thanks, Bruce. And Brett?
So what you're saying is that it does that the GAC wouldn't necessarily participate, but that the community would have to be unanimous in its decision to spill the board, which would go against the principle that I thought we had adopted for months and months now, that no exercise of the empowered community's powers should be decided based on unanimity in the community. So, okay, either you are talking about a carve-out of the GAC carve-out, or you're talking about a carve-out of the principle that the community should not have to act in unanimity to exercise its powers, one or the other. Thanks.
Thanks, Brett. We see some discussion going on in the chat as well with Avery, for example, and Cavus supporting Bruce's suggestion. And Bruce, you've raised your hand again, so please do speak.
Sorry about advice, my hand. Yeah, probably just repeating myself. But I think what we're talking about is that the community has asked for a lower threshold in the case of GAC advice. What the board has said is that in order for that lower threshold to apply, which is lowering the threshold to remove the board, we feel that the IRP process should be used. I'm really astounded that if the IRP process finds that the board is acting in accordance with its mission and bylaws, that we then see that there's some reason to overturn the board. That's a pretty serious decision and go through a pretty thorough process. We should be trusting that process. And if the process basically finds in favour of the board and the community still wants to go ahead with removing the board, we think it's reasonable that the threshold of four should apply. Now, whether it's unanimous or not, I mean, you're creating the special case by removing the GAC from the ability to participate, not us. We're just merely talking about the thresholds, whether it's four or three. We're saying the threshold is three in the case that the board has been found not to have followed its bylaws in the IRP. If the board has followed its bylaws and the community still is that passionate about it, then we think it's reasonable and it should be four SOs and ACs making that decision.
Thanks very much, Bruce. I see Caboose's hand is raised, and then since Brad seems to be the only person on the call having difficulties with this, let's allow for Brad to make a final comment on this, and after that the queue is closed and we're going to take stock and move on. So, Caboose, please.
Thomas. As it was mentioned in the previous call, the occurrence of this situation is very, very rare and improbable. Therefore, we could allow that we maintain the four SOs to remove for the entire board, and the suggestions of the ICANN board seems to be some way which still maintain our proposal without going to too much exception. So I think that due to the very rare occurrence of this situation, we accept the proposal of the board that in any case, in that particular situation, we need four SOACs, means that unanimous situation, because GAC is not allowed to participate in exercising that power. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose. Brett?
Thank you. I agree with Bruce that this is likely to be rare. I agree with Bruce that in this circumstance that I'm fine with going to an IRP process if the issue is one that is questioning whether the board's decision was within the scope and mission of ICANN. However, I don't agree that this is unusual. In fact, if we look at the community powers, the community's decision to ratify or to support a fundamental bylaw change only requires three SOACs. That is a very fundamental, very serious matter, yet is going to be decided by three SOACs. We also have the matter of we still don't know whether the GAC is going to be a decisional participant or not at all. And if that's the case, we're going to have to address the decisional thresholds for exercising all of the community powers, I would think, which could result in the spilling of the board being the result or support of three SOACs in that matter. So I don't think that this is out of bounds here. I also don't think that it's unusual. I agree that if you go through an IRP process and that the IRP confirms that the board's decision is within the scope and mission of ICANN, that the community's movement then to go spill the board would be extraordinary, but I also think that it would also cause some hesitation. And I think that we're all reasonable people here, and we're not going to spill the board willy-nilly. But there are also matters at hand here where a board decision based on GAC advice could be within the scope and mission of ICANN. Bruce mentioned .Africa. The IRP sided with the community on that one. But what if it hadn't? Would that have been sufficient for the community to move to spill the board under the future scenario here? We have other matters on TLDs where the GAC could intervene and force or at least lead to a board decision, which would be based on GAC advice, that would be with, obviously within the scope and mission of ICANN, but nonetheless would be very serious and could lead the community to want to spill the board. I think that that should be a reasonable option, and I don't think it should be one requiring necessarily four SOACs. And I think that the current thresholds work and would be prudent moving forward to serve as a check on the board in this unusual circumstance. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Brett. And now we have to close this item. Brett, I have deliberately let this discussion go on longer than anticipated, longer than planned for. I just wanted to give everyone the opportunity to fully understand both the rationale for the group, for the board's proposal, as well as your concerns. Still, looking at the interventions in the chat room, as well as summarizing what we've heard on the audio bridge, there's a lot of support for the board recommended change, and I do not see any objection beyond what you've raised. So I would suggest that we move on, that we deem the board suggestion as accepted by this group. Again, it deals with exceptional circumstances where, number one, the board decision is based on GAC advice, and number two, where an IRP decides in favor of the board, i.e. where the IRP has confirmed that the board did not act outside of its mission. So let's close this point. Thanks very much for a very engaged and fruitful discussion on this. We have Sean patiently waiting. He's not in the AC room, so I apologize for not getting back to him earlier. Sean, you wanted to make an additional point? Sean, are you still with us? I see Brenda has confirmed that Sean's line has been disconnected, so it's unfortunate Sean left before he had the opportunity to speak, but left, please note on the record that you know, my apology for not getting back to him earlier. It looks like we can now move to the next agenda item. For that, I would like to hand over to Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas, and sorry for being long at unmuting my microphone. This is Mathieu Vey speaking, the CCNSO appointed co-chair. And I have the pleasure to have a totally different type of agenda item, which is related to actually the support we are going to get for the next phase of our work on implementation and workstream 2. And as you are aware, the ICANN board has extended the funding of the INI Stewardship Transition Project in order to support the work until Marrakesh in light of significant expenses being incurred on the project. They had to review the initial expectations. And in Marrakesh, there is planned to be a discussion about the next phase, obviously. We have received a request by Xavier Calves, the CFO of ICANN, and the Board Finance Committee to provide them with an estimate of the costs and the ongoing costs for the remainder of the fiscal year 16 which ends on June the 30th. And the point of this agenda item is to hear your views about the expected support from ICANN to our work in the next few months. Under the assumption that the Workstream 1 proposals would be approved in Marrakesh, as indicated in the tentative timeline that was presented to you earlier in this call, it is our assessment that the potential support would could include, of course, legal counsel drafting of the Workstream 1 implementation documents. We have received input from the lawyers that would help us provide estimates on that. We could also consider legal counsel support for Workstream 2, which will start as early as Marrakesh, obviously, the Workstream 2 work. And a question also about whether we should plan for a face-to-face meeting between Marrakesh and the next ICANN meeting, which is not going to take place in Panama after all. So ICANN 56, if I'm not mistaken, I'm confusing the numbers, in June. And potentially a proposal could be to have a face-to-face the day before the beginning of the next ICANN meeting in June to update on the Workstream 2 items. And the goal of this discussion, once again, is to clarify which are our group requirements before we can get back to Xavier and the Board Finance Committee for a more precise discussion to request some support for our group. And I would like to ask the room for any inputs and comments on this, bearing in mind that, of course, this type of discussion is meant to provide visibility for everyone, also on the planning point of view, both for on our volunteer side as well as on the ICANN side as well. And I see Cavus' hand is up, so please, Cavus.
Thank you, Matthew. I think with the first question, do we need the support of ICANN or not for our next phase of the work? I think the answer is yes and yes. How we could do that? The considerable amount of the support that ICANN has provided from January 2015 up to now has been so much that we have been able to do that because of their hard work and so on and so forth. So the answer is clear. We need the support of ICANN. So many people, so hardly working, tirelessly, beyond call for duty, and so on and so forth. So the answer would be yes. Now, coming to your second question, do we need legal counsel? The clear example was about 2 weeks ago, that we were stuck on a point, and we wanted to have the views of the legal advisor on the issue that some of us have different point of view, and we wanted an independent legal advice, and that advice was given. Look at all of those memo which has been published from the very beginning up to now, which cleared out the situation. So we need also the legal advice. Nevertheless, in order to reduce the price, the certifications or allowance to that advice be given need to be more carefully checked by the courtier and try to optimize that and do it in the way that reduce the price to the extent possible. And the third question, the need for having a face-to-face meeting at this stage should be something provisional for consideration. We cannot decide yet. We will decide in ICANN 55 to see whether or not we really need a one-day meeting at the beginning of ICANN 56. That is my summary of the view. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus, and very thoughtful input, which I'm taking good note of. Next is Sébastien.
Thank you, Mathieu. Sébastien Bachelet speaking. I have a different view about a face-to-face meeting. I think where we will be in June is a bylaw review will be an important time to have some discussion, face-to-face meeting. I can understand that we can't plan anything in between the two ICANN meetings, but for the ex-Panama meeting will be useful. And I would like to suggest that we schedule not just one day, but 2 days. One, the end, or the follow-up of the workstream one, and another one about workstream two. I don't think that we will have enough time to discuss those issues and where we are if we put all that in just one day. And as a reminder, at the ICANN meeting, if staff and board didn't change, that meeting officially will start on Monday, then we could have the weekend to work together on those issues. It will be important. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sebastian. I note that you're extending to 2 days in your proposal, and next is Greg.
Thank you, Greg Chapman, for the record. On the point of needing continuing legal advice, I'll note that experience that started in the CWG, we initially tried to proceed without any retained counsel and tried to rely on the opinions and knowledge of lawyers in the group, such as myself. I think we learned two things through that. One is that even if one is a qualified lawyer in a jurisdiction, generally the type of legal matters that we've been dealing with in this group, and as well in the CWG, but frankly even more in this group, are subspecials. And unless this is your subspecialty, at best you'll be a good client and a student and a guide, but not an authoritative resource or person who can, you know, really provide a final opinion. The second thing we learned is that when you're a participant, and especially one, you know, who's, as we most are, seen as, you know, representing stakeholders or being a stakeholder, you cannot, even if you, in your heart of hearts, believe that you are giving objective legal advice, you're not going to be seen as an objective, neutral resource. Maybe from time to time it will work out that way, but it's a big negative to try to overcome. And frankly, you know, I don't blame people for thinking that a legal interpretation could be based on self-interest, not on neutrality, especially if you can't make that judgment yourself, because you yourself are not a lawyer, not qualified in the jurisdiction, so you can't tell whether somebody's being a straight shooter or not. For both those reasons, we really need outside counsel. I think they've proven their worth time and time again. Yes, we need to work on cost effectiveness, cost control, management issues. One of the things I've pointed out repeatedly is that an essential part of managing lawyers is timely review of their actual legal bill detail. I don't think that's anything we've actually been afforded, or if not, I haven't seen them, which maybe I'm thankful for that. But there are a number of things we can do to be cost effective, but I certainly would not suggest that you need outside counsel for every working group. That would be absurd, but the issues that we are dealing with here and certain of the issues in Workstream 2 are absolutely legal issues. They're not policy issues. They're issues, or they're not merely policy issues, but they are issues that are grounded in specific laws and specific jurisdictions, and we need that advice and counsel no matter. Without it, we'll be back. Ultimately, we'll end up running up against a brick wall where we don't either don't have the resources, or the resources are seen as interested and therefore can't ultimately be seen as neutral. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. So I think indeed the provision of neutral and independent legal advice is absolutely a necessity in the next phase. Anand, and then I will close the item.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm going to make a plea for doing something reasonable. And I'll talk a little bit about legal and a little bit more about travel. We had essentially an unlimited budget for legal, and what happened was probably quite predictable. I think we need to set to estimate what a reasonable budget is for the work that we have going forward, given that we will be drafting a few bylaws in phase in Workstream 2. There will be changes made, but it won't be at the same level as we've been working till now. So I think we need to work with the lawyers and with legal counsel and whoever knows how to budget for lawyers. I'm certainly not an expert on that, and come up with a reasonable estimate and then figure out a way to stick to it. Should we end up somewhere partway through the fiscal year in some crisis situation that no one could have reasonably predicted, then maybe we'll need an extra, quantum of money at that point, and we deal with it just as we do any budget situation where emergencies arise. I think the same should be for travel. I think we need to exercise some reasonable care, and I don't think we can predict now when, which month and which meeting we're going to need budget travel budget for in the coming year to say we will definitely be at a stage in June where we need it, or October, and we'll need a meeting, or we'll need an emergency meeting in December. I don't think we can say that, but I think we should have a reasonable travel budget allocated and not simply spend it because it's there, but make reasonable decisions. And I think the co-chair should be empowered to make decisions on behalf of the group. I don't think there should be a popular vote for who wants to go on a trip tomorrow. But I think we need a budget, and then we need to both stick to it and only use it if necessary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adam. And I think that's very reasonable. The elements that we collect during this discussion are already very useful to provide some inputs to Icon Finance on the remainder of the fiscal year, and at the same time, clearly we need to make that discussion, have this discussion again in the next few weeks, and especially in Marrakesh, in order to clarify our work plan, which is a condition to providing predictability on the budget. And so we'll come back to this discussion, but I think as co-chairs, we have sufficient inputs at this point to engage with Icon Finance for fiscal year 16 at least. And we'll also have a follow-up discussion with the with our lawyers prior to Marrakesh to discuss the way forward and get some inputs that we can rely on about how we can optimize things in the future. So that's thank you for all contributors on this item. And I'm moving back to Leon for the last agenda item of this meeting. Leon.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. This is Leon Sanchez. And we have reached the end of our call, and I'd like to call for any other business at this point? I see Alan Greenberg's hand is up. Alan?
Thank you. There was a mention saying we're going to briefly review the timeline at the end, and I was holding off till then to ask this question, but I'll ask it under any other business. We spent a fair amount of time today talking about the changes that have been identified to date, some of them trivial, some of them not. But even on the relatively trivial ones, we spent a fair amount of time. We're now going into, if I understood the timeline that was presented at the beginning of the meeting, and I was a few minutes late, so I may have missed something, we're going into a two-day review by CCWG members, and then the final report will be published, period. At what point are we going to be able to vet or at least see in a summarized way what the changes are that are going to be drifting in over the next 2 days from the CCWG members?
I guess that's a question that someone in staff could help us to answer. But yes, we definitely are running into a 48-hour review period. And this, of course, encompasses the incorporation of minority statements so that we can publish the final report on February the 18th. As to when we are going to be able to see, if I'm understanding well, a comparison between documents as to easily identify which were the changes between our third document and this final document, I am not sure. I'm getting confirmation that all changes will be published. So I guess that on 18th February, we would be publishing the list of changes that we have between the third proposal and this final report.
Okay, may I have a follow-up?
Yes, of course.
Yep. So in that case, what we're going to see is a combination of staff and co-chairs making decisions as to whether the suggested change is purely correction, you know, spelling mistake, whatever, or a clarification because something is less than clear or there were inconsistencies, and presumably not substance. I presume if something is identified along the way that where there are two different versions in two different parts of the report which actually differ, then somehow it at least has to be published to the mailing list to alert the group as you go along as to what these changes are. You really don't want to publish a final report and have someone say, hey, you made a mistake. So somewhere we need to be at a middle path. Thank you.
Yes, we will go back to staff and ask for them to produce this kind of note highlighting, of course, the changes. So this would all be available for everyone to review before we publish the final report.
I'm pointing out there may be some things that come up which are not completely clear, and you may want to come up with a process by which you can get those clarified quickly anyway. Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Alan. Next on the queue, I have Brett Sheffer.
Thank you. This actually complements Alan's remarks earlier. Will we be seeing a formal layout of Bruce's proposal on the changes for the thresholds? Will we be seeing a line-in edit of that substantive change to the draft before the final report is published, and will that be circulated to the list? And finally, just following procedural points here, will we be having a second call to discuss that substantive change that was added at the last minute so that people that are not on this call would have an opportunity to weigh in if they choose to do so? Thank you.
Yes, we will ask for this red line as soon as possible for staff to circulate to the list, and I think that we will be able to have that red line circulated today. Next in the queue, I have Caboose.
I think the entire community expect to have one report as a final report of CCWG, self-contained, self-sufficient, without a need to compare with any previous things. It would be difficult to have that. So would we have a final, revised, full report of the CCWG, which goes to the ICANN, to NTIA, or to ICANN, without any need to have another document side by side and compare the additions? So you are talking of supplement, you are talking of revised, but I am thinking of one full, self-sufficient, self-contained document. Do we have that or not before ICANN 55? Thank you.
That is definitely the idea, Caboose. Yes, that is the idea. Okay, so I see no other hands raised. I do see an acknowledgement from Andrew Sullivan for staff. It's in the chat box, and he's saying that as an AOV, I would like to move thanks to the staff for their heroic efforts in getting things out. And I think that we all agree on that, and we all support that acknowledgement and recognition to staff. Cavus, I see your hand up again.
I think, John, if this is our last meeting, or we want to refer to the staff, I think it is not sufficient to just talk in the call. I request the co-chairs, three together, to draft an appreciation text of several paragraphs with respect to the tremendous hard work, tireless work of the staff, and put part of the report, because acknowledgement also should go to the staff. And they have been doing so much work that we never expected so quickly. Sometimes we are bombarded by the documents in less than an hour and so on and so forth. So I don't think it is sufficient that we just say we thank you very much. It was more than thank you. And I request you kindly, if you and two other coaches agree, to provide a written, formal appreciation for the ICANN staff, and if you could name some people, it would better. It is not singling out the people with us, but I really, sincerely, perhaps urge you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus, and you just blew our surprise from the coaches to the staff, but yes, we will definitely consider what you are kindly requesting. Thank you very much. So, at this point, are there any other business? If not, we can end this call, and I think we can say that this call is adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone, for attending.